You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, April 15th. Oh my God, is that tax day? Ugh. Episode 3928 brought to you today by our friends at Chewy. Good morning, horse people.
Well, good morning, everybody. We filed an extension, so it's not my tax day.
So did we!
I think we figured it out. We filed extensions like 78% of the years we've been alive. So
yeah,
they don't seem to penalize you. As long as you pay your bill, they don't care. So there's nobody working there anymore. Everybody got fired. So I figured they don't got time to look at it anyway. Right. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. Today, we're going to catch up with a very special friend of Jennifer and I's. She's an eventing legend, Kim Wolness, in our Where Are They Now segment. You might remember her from what movie? Well, her horse from what movie?
You'll remember it when we start talking to her, because I got her to open up a little bit about the movie Sylvester. She was riding her horse, the Grey Goose, but I mean, really, she was Sylvester. She was riding Sylvester.
We recorded this one earlier, and Kim's very, very special, and we think you're going to enjoy this. It's actually a little longer than we do with most of our interviews, but we think you'll definitely enjoy it. And also stay tuned for some fascinating news from history and some really weird, weird news stories. And then in the post show, Ashley's going to join us to go over the HRN survey results that just came in, and we do that exclusively for the auditors. So if you want to become an auditor, go to horseradionetwork.com, scroll down to the middle of the page, click on the auditor banner, and you too can join the fun for as little as $3 a month. Now, I wanted to bring this up. We're on track, Jamie, for one of our best months, download-wise, numbers-wise, in 5 years. If we keep the second half of the month the same way we did the first month, we'll break the record for the last 5 years. So please, we're begging you to go out and tell your friends about the show, tell your friends at the barn about the show, post on your socials, or you know, and all of that's free stuff to do. Leave us a review. If you haven't left us a review on your podcast player, almost every podcast player has a way to leave a review on a show. Leave us a review. Give us 5 stars or 4 stars. Or if you're going to do 1 star, don't listen and don't do it. But, but if you're a lot of stars, then definitely leave us some stars. That does help, actually. Podcast players look at the star ratings, and they really do look at those. How they look at those is then when somebody searches for horse, the shows with the most number of reviews and the highest stars come up first. So please definitely do that for us.
It's funny you mentioned this, because I was just talking to my brother the other day, and he was like, you know, not that he cares, but he's like, how's work? And I'm like, oh, it's going good. You know, my stock answer is they still pay me to do it. And so he goes, yeah, I know they do, because I follow you on my thing, and sometimes my podcast I'm actually listening to ends, and I hear these stupid hoof beats coming across, and I'm like, ugh.
It gives us a play, though. We're thankful.
Well, he actually asked, he goes, how long do I have to leave it running for to give you credit for a listen? And I was like,
it depends on the player, but usually it's 1 minute.
Okay, yep. I'll tell him, because I was like, could you please go review it at least and like give us 5 stars? Yeah. Like, literally just told him this yesterday. So it's crazy. You brought it up.
Well, we thank you guys for listening, and we appreciate your help. Notice there were storms everywhere yesterday.
Oh my God. I am going to be a little bit of a mess today, because we had those storms, you know, like all night. They're like, tornadoes are going to come. Well, it didn't get to be that severe. We had, you know, lightning, hail, wind, rain, all that stuff. So it was already, I wasn't sleeping very well. All the horses were in. But then Chad's on call, and he starts call at 2 a.m. And of course, he gets called at 2 a.m., which means he's supposed to be in Dallas in 2 hours, which is 3 hours away.
So does he have to get
away.
Up and just drive there?
Yes, he used to get up
at 2 a.m. Like, I'd be falling asleep on the way. I don't know how he does
He doesn't do the on-call very much, but he did it this month. And I was like, never again, because I guess I get paid more money. So he's like, I got to go. So I'm out making coffee at 2 o'clock in the freaking morning, standing there. And there's lightning and thunder. And he's supposed to drive down to Dallas in this name. I didn't sleep like at all. I tracked his drive the whole way because I was so freaked out. And he got down there in 2.5 hours. I don't know how he did it. So he drove aggressively through a freaking storm. So yeah, I didn't sleep. So it's all good. So excuse me if I'm missing words today. Blech.
You know, we talked about Reed Timmer, the chaser, the tornado chaser. And yeah. He got, I don't know if you've started following at all, but there was a lot of storms up north, right? Way north of you. And he got into one of the tornadoes with the Terminator, his vehicle. And he did the video. Those guys are all just, it's so funny to listen to it because they're so excited and screaming and, you know, we're in, you know, and he has these little things he puts down to hold the car down.
The newscaster we listened to, Chad and I were talking last night, we're like, because it didn't get as crazy as they thought it was going to get here in Oklahoma. And he was like, David Payne has to visibly hide his disappointment that things are going to be okay. Like, he wants the drama. Yep. Like, wants it.
Yep. Yes. Welcome to Reed Timmer's world.
It's okay. Tonight's another night. Hopefully Reed's heading down here to Oklahoma because they're telling me going to get it again. Yay, super fun.
Well, good luck with that. I hope you get some sleep tonight. All right, Daily Winnie time.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm.
Happy birthday to our terrific auditors, Carol, Roxanne, Nicole, and Shelby. We hope you have a fantastic day.
I just love that I hear Chili and Butters every time we do this show. It's so fun. Okay, so this is a little bit of a story, but I'll get you to it in the end. So I got a phone call from Horse and Hound last week, and they said, we've got a horse that is at a training center south of you, and he retired a year ago at the age of 2, and he has been standing in a field for a year. And they would like to donate him, but since he's like ready to go in a field, I'll just have him bring him to you, straight to you, and you get started. I was like, cool, no problem. So deliver this horse. And the guy delivering the horse says, he's like a little hurt, but it happened yesterday. And I was like, what does that mean? To get him out of the trailer. This horse is running through my arena on 3 legs. Like, it's like a dog has got a sticker in the back foot and he's running around. I have video of this. He's holding up his back left leg, back right leg the whole time, just not even putting a weight on it. I was like, oh my God, this is not something that happened yesterday. So like, he's very professional at running on 3 legs. So I call the farrier and I'm hoping that, you know, he does a swipe and pus blows into next week, you know, and paints the wall. I just knew it was going to happen because he was acting like he had a broken leg. So farrier comes. And by the way, this horse has a feet the size of dinner plates and retired from the track a year ago and still is wearing 1 race plate.
So nothing has been done.
Nothing has been done to this horse. He hasn't been handled. He's been fed. He's so pretty. He's like the most beautiful. He's gorgeous, but like super lame, bad feet, all this. So I get the farrier out. I have to give him some Dorm gel to get it because he hasn't been handled in a year. So I get him trimmed and no thing. So I have to call Horse and Hound and I'm like, hey, Nelta, nothing happened. So basically at this point, she's like, all right, let's call the vet. And I was like, I'm going to take him to the vet, the clinic that is south of me. I'm going to take him to the vet because there is a good chance what he's got going on, I'm going to have to leave him there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not something we're going to fix. Like, I'm pretty sure there's something broken in this horse, and it is not something that we can fix. And I'm like sick all day yesterday. I'm just, I didn't sleep the night before. I'm just sick because I've got to do this thing with this horse, and I don't, it's just the worst, you know, but it's so nice to have a situation where I can call the rescue and be like, hey, this horse might not survive this. I don't know what it is, but it's really, really bad. So she's like, okay, do what you can. So I take him down to the clinic, and, you know, he did improve a little bit after his feet got trimmed, which I did notice, but he's still like super lame. So they do a layman's exam, and then they just start taking x-rays. I mean, x-ray from, he, you could tell he was uncomfortable in the stifle when you palpate him. So it was like, start with the stifle and then we'll work our way down. So, I mean, stifle x-ray, you guys know how expensive x-rays are. Stifle x-rays all the way around. He's got some effusion and there's some swelling, but there's nothing ginormous. So then we go down to the hock, and there's nothing in the hock. Like, everything looks fine. There's no visible anything. And then he takes pictures of the fetlock. And this is, again, hind right. And he goes, well, I know why they retired him at two. And I'm like, oh, here it goes. I'm going to have to put this horse down. And he's so, and of course, at this point, he's like rubbing on me and like I'm scratching his face and he's like snuggling with me. And I'm like, son of a gun, you're just like making me love you more. And I, the problem is I get so attached. I get, oh, it's not a healthy lifestyle for me to do this, you know? And so I'm loving, and he was like, here's the problem. And so he calls me back to look at the x-rays. This horse has a chip in his fetlock that is the size of the last knuckle on your pinky finger. A chip so big that every time the horse like pushes down and bends its foot, the chip squishes up into the sesamoid bones. So every time the horse flexes, that chip is jamming
like having a razor
into
blade
the sesamoid.
In there.
Yes. Yeah. It's like having a rock in your shoe. And yeah, every time you step down, you're stepping on this rock. And he's like, well, he was like, he's not, I was like, so it's not going to kill him. So yay, I don't have to kill the horse today. That's fun. But the other thing is like, I said, what can he do? And he was like, you know, he walks around sound, but as far as performance goes, he's never going to be able to hold a canter on this lead because it hurts every time I'm like, he can't even trot right now. So he's like, you know, I think he's also probably got some EPM going on because, you know, it's Oklahoma, horse in the field, EPM. So he's like, I would treat him for EPM. And I would, he's like, your stifles are hurting because he's holding his leg up so much when he's running and he's probably locking his stifle because he has zero top line. He was like, I would butte this horse for 5 days and then just start like the back to work strengthening, walking up hills, over poles, you know, but he goes, in the end, to make this horse have a life that is comfortable, this chip needs to be taken out. Okay, so random horse standing in a field. The rescue's never even seen him. He's been in my house for a week. I've already spent money trimming him. I've already spent money, all this money getting the thing. So I call the rescue. I call Nelda, and she knows what I'm doing. And she answers the phone, and she's like, do I want to talk to you? And I said, he's not going to die. She was like, okay, tell me what's going on. Son of a gun. She's already booking the appointment to get the chip taken out so this horse can have a life. Mm. And it just...
Not too many rescues to do that.
No, it's no, they don't. And I just like, I mean, in the... Sorry.
This woman needs to be sainted. She really does.
Yeah, she does. But also, if you guys are sitting at home and you're like, I'm going to go to Starbucks today. If you could just take that $5 you're about to spend on a cup of coffee and PayPal it over to Horse and Hound, just because I can't even believe like that's a thing. Like this horse you've never seen has been standing in a field, is completely abandoned, has no manner, like just... Like, okay, let's schedule a $3,000 surgery on this horse that has never raced because obviously it just, I can't believe the open heart and the just immense desire to do good because I was presented with this, like, I don't have to put him down, but like, what am I going to do with him? What is anybody going to do with him? Well, we're going to give him a freaking life and we're going to take a chip out. The vet said, I've taken chips out like this and the horse is going to be high level jumpers. He was like, no problem. He was like, I pre-purchased one that had a chip in the ankle last year or 2 years ago. And he was like, and they discounted the horse because it had a chip in it. The people bought it for a fraction of the price, had the chip done. They're doing Grand Prix show jumping. He was like, just like, this is like not a huge problem to have it when it's
except
removed.
For the $5,000 for the surgery.
Except for the surgery cost. So if anybody is feeling over generous today, I just cannot. And I don't want to say the name of the horse because we're going to have to chase down the people because the vet bill yesterday was $1,000 with all the x-rays. So we're going to see if we can get the people that donated him and obviously didn't. Of course, we got five different stories from five different people, you know, so we're going to have to go through all that. So I don't want to mention anything until that is done. But if anybody wants to just donate to Horse and Hound, you can go to Horse and Hound Rescue Foundation. Google that. That's their website. And they have a PayPal button right there. So anyway, I don't ask for many donations to this amazing place that I get to work with. But this is one of those days. And by the way, I'm doing all of this for free on this horse. Like I would not take a dime for helping this horse when they're so willing to help as well. So yeah. Anyway, Horse Hound, donate. Don't go to Starbucks today. Thank you. I'm done.
Well, without you two, you and Nelda in the mix, this horse wouldn't be here right now. So thank you for what you do too and all your caring. Without that, this wouldn't happen.
Golly, Chad's like, I can't believe you get so upset about, because I was just sick. And he's like, I just don't understand why you get so sick. You don't even know this horse. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't know what's wrong with
me. I think some people have more empathy genes than other people. And apparently you got them all for the state of Oklahoma.
Pouring out of my brain. I can't. I took my calm gummies on the way to the vet yesterday because I was so upset. Like, I need hemp in the form of calmness right now.
Speaking of medications, managing your horse's medications doesn't have to be complicated. Chewy makes it simple. Just add your horse's prescription to your cart and check out with your vet's information. Chewy
handles another awesome place. They give all of the open bags to rescues. Nelda goes every month and picks up open bags from Chewy. That's how awesome they are. And they donate too. So it's a great company. I'm happy that everybody's here today.
Chewy handles the rest by reaching out to your vet for approval and shipping your order right to your barn in just a few days. From allergy relief to joint support, everything your horse needs is just a few clicks away. Plus, Chewy's licensed pharmacists are available 24/7 if you have any questions. Visit chewy.com/equine just to get started today. For trusted care delivered for the life with horses, there's Chewy. All right, we're going to do this next because we have
a very... I didn't mean to cry. Good Lord, I got to get it together.
You got this, Jamie. You got this. We're going to switch gears now into one of your favorite movies of all time. So,
okay.
Join us as we chat with past guests to find out, where are they now?
Our next guest up is very special to Jennifer and I and a lot of the world. And I'm going to make her feel really old right now because Jennifer and I figured it out today. It made us feel really old, to be honest. Figured it out today. And we've known her for 37 years. In the early days when I met Jennifer, she had a trainer that she worked with. She was cool, and I liked how gentle she was working with the horses and with the students, you know, with Jennifer. More importantly, Jennifer loved her. And I didn't know at the time that this person was a legendary eventer with a legendary horse. I just knew her as Kim Walness. And she came up and she did clinics with us and hung out at our house, and we had so much fun talking. And of course, she's from Grey Goose fame. And we're still friends to this day, and we want to welcome her back as part of Where Are They Now? Kim Walness, so good to talk to you again.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Same here.
Do you feel old now? 37 years, Kim. <It's> like, we were shocked when we actually figured out how long it had been.
I'm closing in on 80, Glenn, so I've accepted where I am. So
are you really? I didn't know that. 70. I thought you were like 70. So
no, I'm 70, 78.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're in good shape. You're doing well, Kim.
Wow, thank you, sir.
So last time we had you on, let's start with this. Last time we had you on, they were working on a documentary about Grey Goose. How's that going?
Well, it's on pause at the moment, okay. But it's still ongoing.
That's what happens with documentaries and TV shows and movies all the time. So
it's like, yes. Yeah.
So obviously we've talked to you about many things over the years, from Grey Goose to eventing in general and all of that stuff. How are you doing now? What are you up to now?
Well, I don't know if you heard, but my horse, Gideon Goodhart, my stallion, passed away.
Yes, I did. I was very sad to see that too.
Right. So I'm entering an entirely new phase of life that has been an interesting transition, where I don't have a horse, and which I've had a horse since I was 16.
I was going to say, that's the first time, right?
Yes, it is the first time I haven't had a horse, and all the gear that I have accumulated through the years for up to 10 horses at a time, you know, I'm having to release all that. So it's releasing a way of life that it's just evolving. That's all. I'm evolving. So I'm doing more remote work at this point, teaching. I'm also doing animal communication remotely and lessons remotely, life coaching, consultations for people who are looking to buy horses, that sort of thing.
Fortunately, technology is at the point now where you can do all that stuff where 20 years ago you couldn't.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Yes. Yes.
So, you know, we've talked about eventing in general. And of course, Rolex is coming up, or Kentucky. I'll never stop calling it Rolex.
All of us old folks. We're going to call it Kentucky forever.
I did want to talk to you a little bit about
Rolex. Yes.
So you've obviously been following that event since the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's changed a lot. Were they doing long form when mm-hmm. that started?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, the world championships were in 1978, and the first non-world championship event was held in 1979, which was a modified intermediate over the same course with some of the fences taken out, but most of them were still there. And that's the first time that the Gray and I competed there, was in 1979. And then in 1980, I believe, it was when Rolex came on as a sponsor. But it was held in the long format. We did Rosen Tracks. We did steeplechase.
And I think in 1985, you rode Sylvester in it. I mean, obviously.
Well, not in the competition. It was a fake competition.
Supposed
to be going prelim.
Not in Jamie's brain. In Jamie's brain, you rode.
I was like 8 years old, okay? Like, you were a champion.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun making Sylvester.
So in those early days, were the crowds as big?
No. No, they weren't, although there were crowds. There were definitely crowds. But in those days, I don't even think we had tapes. I don't think the tapes started until later.
So there's no video of that, those early ones?
No, like tapes to keep you out of the keep the crowd.
Oh, that kind of tape. Gotcha. Okay.
Galloping lane.
Galloping lane. Gotcha. God. So the people were just walking everywhere with the dogs?
Yeah, but you know, the people who were there were educated people, and so they didn't get in the way. Now, I could be wrong. I could be thinking back further to other events, but 1982 is the first year that they filmed.
Okay, I didn't realize that either.
Mm-hmm. So I got lucky, and that was the year we won.
What do you think was the turning point where eventing kind of caught on to the populace and went, oh, this is a cool sport, and the numbers started increasing? Was there something that happened, or was it just a natural progression of things? Or was it video?
I believe that there was a push from the USCTA to appeal to people about the danger of it. That film, Riding for America in 1982, kind of emphasized the danger of the sport, because they were trying to do what the car racing people did, to get more folks.
That's interesting. And that's when all those videos came out, too, of all the falls. They were just nothing but falls.
So they, and people did come.
Everybody wants to see a car crash.
Well, and also a dumb girls event, we see the falls, we're like, oh my god, I want to do that.
You're very right. Yes, it's just like, oh my god, that jump looks impossible. When is the next competition and how can I get there?
And you were wearing helmets that didn't even have straps back then. I mean,
no, we did have straps. We just had a single chin strap.
But the helmet was useless, really. I mean,
it was useless. I mean, now for show jumping, there was no strap. You had your velvet helmet.
Right.
We had skull caps, calientes.
Oh, that's right.
Cross country. Mm-hmm.
That's right. The early days of the skull caps looked like bad motorcycle helmets.
That's right.
I gotta say, though, I know I just mentioned it, but I learned about eventing through the movie Sylvester, which was where you and Grey Goose had your, you know, I mean, that's, I feel like when eventing went global, like, hey guys, look what this little girl on a farm who has no parents can do when she trains with the farmhand and learns to ride this horse and runs around and wins Kentucky.
Yeah. Even Melissa Gilbert could do it.
You know, she hadn't ridden before that film. I was shocked. I said to her, didn't you ride on Little House on the Prairie? She said they put me on the back of a horse and led me around. That she never had ridden.
And her daddy pulled her in a wagon. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
You know how these actors always lie on their, when they're going in for auditions, when they get asked, have you ridden a horse? And they all say yes, figuring the one, you know, the one pony ride counts. I wonder if Melissa lied when she
I don't know. But the, you know, we filmed for 2 weeks. We did all the work with the upper level, with the advanced fences. We filmed for 2 weeks before the main cast and crew came from Texas. And so the first time I saw Melissa ride, it was the dressage scene. So she got on Sylvester, who was a very large, gangly horse. And she started in the dressage, in the dressage arena, and he bolted with her.
And to
give her credit, she was able to keep him within the boards. But then when she finally got him stopped, she was shaking like a leaf, obviously, and she got off and she said, I'm never getting on this horse again. And everybody's just like, and I was not allowed to give any input because that's a union thing.
They had hired
an instructor to teach her, and I was not allowed to give her any. I could not talk to her about riding.
But how was the instructor, in your opinion?
I'd rather not talk about
that. There's the answer.
Well, that's not really fair, because to give her credit, Melissa did ride. She didn't jump or anything. All of that was done by other people. But she was able to bring that horse to keep him inside the board. So she obviously taught her some pretty important.
Well, you know, tasks. And that's tough. You're walking into a situation like this with a horse like that. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Well, they said what happened was they were filming all the galloping shots in Texas, like when he's, you know, when she's chasing. Anyway, he got used to the fact that when Melissa was in the saddle, he was supposed to gallop. And that's what caused the bolt in the arena. So I walked up to the director and I said, I have a bit that I use on the gray cross country that looks just like the one you're using on the outside, but is not the same on the inside. And I think she can hold him with that. So they used that bit and she was able to ride him again after that.
Oh, that makes sense.
You saved the movie.
Now,
Melissa Gilbert's alive because of you. Oh, my God.
Now, those were the days. You're not getting mailbox money for that movie anymore, are you?
I never did.
Oh, is that right?
We just got paid a one-time fee.
Oh.
$75, and here you go. Giddy up.
It was ridiculous. I came to find out it was ridiculously low in the movie industry, but I didn't know. So It's okay. It was great fun. They took great care of us. Andy got to be with my daughter, got to come. I think she was like, I don't know, 10 or 12 at the time. And it was just such an adventure for us both. And she even has a little vignette in the movie when she's on her black pony and she's getting people out of the way on course.
And that was the early days of the Kentucky Horse Park, too. It's nothing like it is now, obviously. I mean, it's
correct.
You know, most of us that have been there, going there for 30 years, it's hard to even remember now before the big stadiums and all of that stuff. You know, it's before the World Equestrian Games. It was a facility for showing horses and had a museum and stuff. You know,
that's right.
It's nothing like it was now. Yet I find it hard to remember those early days. It's like,
well, of course, they're stuck in my memory because that's when I was competing there. But it was so, even the show jumping, you know, now it's an arena and it's all confined and everything.
Was it in a field then? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a rolling field. And we had like grabbins, you know, the grave type fence where you went down in and sometimes you had to jump into water and sometimes you had to clear water and, you know, there were all these varying different obstacles.
And, probably you've never seen Rosen Tracks if you're under 40, maybe, you know, like it was done then.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they still do them occasionally. But I mean, if I was under the tutelage of Matt the Farmhand, I would do Rosen Tracks. I mean, what a dreamy guy that was.
We keep coming back to Sylvester, I notice.
Yes, there's a theme here.
Well, you know what, though? That's interesting that you said that, Jamie, and what a compliment to the movie and to Kim that you took up eventing because of that movie. That's kind of cool.
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
You're not alone in that. And so glad that we were able to help spark another generation's interest in the sport.
You were a Sally Swift. You taught the Sally Swift method of centered riding. That's where Jennifer got it from, and it's what I knew. And you were one of the first trainers I ever saw that was as gentle, because, you know, in that day, that wasn't really a thing. It wasn't
No, it wasn't.
I mean, that's, you know, Monty, Jamie's a Monty Roberts certified instructor. You know, Monty was out there preaching it, and there were a few out there preaching it, Sally Swift, one of them. Do you think that's gotten better over time? Have we gotten better? Or I know it's still a long way to go in every discipline.
People talk the talk. They don't always walk the walk.
Mm.
But I was trained by, I came to that gentleness naturally because I was, you know, raised on The Black Stallion and all those other books, Black Beauty, all those books that gave the horse's viewpoint and were based on relationship rather than training. So they broke the odds because they went beyond, you know, they couldn't train conventionally. They had to train through relationship, and that I had horses right from the get-go that required that.
Kim, I always thought it was a blessing and a curse that I've read Black Beauty 4,027 times. So it does change the way you think about when you're dealing with your horse, because you have this inner monologue of what's going on in their head. I'm 48 years old. I have thought about that book pretty much every single time I'm working with the horse. And that's how those things really affect you. And that's how the Sylvester affected me when I was, you know, 8 years old. And it's funny you just mentioned Sally Swift, Glenn, because I used to go to a summer camp, and the summer camp in the summers, then you would go one weekend a month for a pony club. And every Saturday night, we would go up to the main house and we would get to watch a horse movie. Usually, it was Sylvester or The Black Stallion or Black, one of these movies. And we would watch Sally Swift centered riding videos, like tapes.
Wonderful.
You know, these were when you would put in tapes and we'd all be like, okay, lesson time. So it's amazing just talking to you how much of you and your presence affected my youth and all the way up until now. So thank you.
Wow. Thank you for letting me know. And you're very welcome. I live for that, you know, just to share what I have been blessed to learn along the way from Sally, from Linda Tellington Jones, from Jack LaGoff, from Bettina Drummond, from Colonel Card, all the wonderful people that I've been blessed to work with in my life. And all the horses. The horses are the ones, you know, I take stuff back and the horses say yay or nay, and I keep the yay stuff and I dump the nay.
So in looking at all those names that you just threw out, because those are some of the best of the best, who do you hear in your head, or did you hear in your head all the time?
No, well, it all depended on who I was. So for a long time, it was Sally, because she was a huge influence. She resonated so strongly with me and changed not only the way I rode, but the way I walked through life. You know, she gave me permission to be me, what was really true to me, rather than trying to conform to what everybody else said had to be done.
Wow.
But Linda Tellington Jones is also in there all the time, because she took Body Work for Humans, the Feldenkrais technique, which is a way of actually reteaching body parts that don't know how to work right or cannot work right, how to use other body parts to compensate. So I was not sound when I started eventing. And I certainly didn't get any sounder as time went on.
It's funny about eventers and that.
Yeah, a funny thing there. So I had to become a master of compensation. And that, I would say, is one of the main things I do now, is help folks learn how to find positive compensation patterns that when they've had injuries or they've had trauma, or they, you know, whether it's emotional or whether it's physical, either way, one can learn to go beyond that.
And there isn't an inventor out there that doesn't have arthritis eventually. I mean,
we start out not sound in the mind, and then we eventually become not sound in the body. But, you know, it's a beautiful.
There's a quote.
Yeah, really.
That's the quote of the day.
Amen. Write that down. That's a good one, Jamie.
Do you know Sally Swift? And this is fairly, a lot of people don't know this. She was 72 when she introduced centered riding. This wasn't something she started with when she was 30. She was 72. Now, she lived in 95. So she did something right. But yeah.
Yes, well, because she did, you know, she studied martial arts. She has scoliosis, severe scoliosis, which is what got her started on all this. She was doing some therapy riding, and then she got fascinated with the horses and started applying everything she was learning about herself to riding in the horses. And yeah, you know, this little wizened woman would come in and just change her life. And she studied with martial artists. She studied with Alexander technique. So I was introduced to Alexander technique through Sally, and I was introduced to Feldenkrais through Linda back in the early 80s. So I was really blessed to have that incredible input into how to help Gray, who was a really gangly guy, organize his body, and how I could keep going even when doctors told me not to.
Well, you did that for Jennifer. You were Jennifer's. So I thank you for that. And yes, she has arthritis too.
Yeah, well, don't we all?
You did that for a lot of people. And you know, I can speak personally that, well, Jamie and I would not be doing this show up to our 4,000th episode. Can you believe that, Kim? We're almost at 4,000.
We wouldn't
be here together if it weren't for you, apparently. Because she wouldn't have, if she hadn't seen the movie.
Good point.
Yeah.
There you go.
Inspired the show. So there you go, Glenn.
Aww.
We thank you. Where can people find you, Kim?
I have a website, which is kimwalness.com or thewayofthehorse.com. Either one gets you there. It's kind of out of date, but still, it's there. And I'm on Facebook under Kim Walness.
I'll put links in the show notes to everything too. But you still are available for remote consultations, for buying horses, for rider position, for whatever, right?
Life coaching, for animal communication, relationship coaching. Yeah, all of that stuff. And I do travel in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I'm just not into flying these days.
Nobody's into flying these days. I said that Jamie's husband's a pilot, so that's why I said that.
Well, it's not his fault.
No, no, it's not. I'm sure he'd prefer it was better too. Kim, we appreciate you so much. We love you. Jennifer said to say she loves you, and you need to talk sometime.
Sounds good to me. I look forward to it. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Glenn.
Here's a barn hack you'll wish you knew sooner. You can kill flies before they even hatch. Fly predators are beneficial bugs that prey on fly pupae, killing flies before you ever see them. No more buzzing, biting, or endless stomping and swatting. They don't bother people or animals, but they do keep your barn, pasture, or paddock way more comfortable. Start early and enjoy fewer flies all season. Get yours now at spalding-labs.com.
That's right. It's time for This Day in Equine History. April 16th, 1977 is the birthday of Milton. Do you know that name, Jamie? Milton?
Milton. My dad's first name is Melton.
Close. The legendary gray
don't
show.
Don't call him that, by the way. He'll kill you.
No. But he doesn't look anything like this horse. The legendary gray show jumper partnered with John Whitaker. Milton was the first horse outside of racing to win over $1 million in prize money.
That Milton. John Whitaker. You said John Whitaker had gone with it. Yeah.
And he's still considered by many to be the greatest pure jumper ever to enter the arena. His trophy cabinet has a lot of trophies in it. He won back-to-back individual golds at the European Championships in 87 and 89. He was a World Cup winner in 90 and 91 and the World Equestrian Games team gold and individual silver in 1990. So Milton is a name that I haven't thought about in forever. He was a big in the magazines back then.
Oh, yeah.
On April 16th, 1889, a colt was born in Shelbyville, Tennessee, that would change how the world viewed animal intelligence. We've talked about this one, but it's been years. A beautiful Jim Key, his name was Jim Key, he was an Arabian Hamiltonian cross who became a global sensation. Do you remember this at all?
What's a Hamiltonian?
We've covered Hamiltonians, so you can look that up.
Okay.
His trainer was William Key.
Just tell me to shut up and Google it. Is basically what you just did.
Yes.
Okay. You're fine.
His trainer was William Key, a former slave and self-taught veterinarian, used only kindness and patience to teach. To teach Jim Key. Jim could reportedly read, write his name, and do math up to the number 30, and even could use a cash register. He was used to promote the fledgling humane movement. Millions of children signed the Jim Key Band of Mercy Pledge, promising to be kind to animals. And so he was basically the pioneer for animal welfare in the United States. And he was a former slave and self-taught veterinarian. And the horse was Jim Key. His name was William Key. So there you go. Hmm. So basically, you know, all of that started with him all those years ago.
Makes me think of Wild Horse Annie getting all the kids to write about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very similar. Very similar. All right. Now it's time to change the news to this.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
Well, I'm disappointed in most of you. So remember, if you're ever looking through the news and you're like, oh my God, that's so weird, email it to me at weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Just like Delia did.
That's it?
She's the only one.
We had like 50 last week.
Where have you guys been?
It's like people have lives and stuff.
So I'm going to celebrate Delia to the highest level today for sending me the one story. So I had to do my own work on these and I'm a little irritated. However, it does mean that I'm going to spend a lot of time in Florida. Just
of course.
So you guys know. So we're going to start with this one. Flagler County, this is Palm Coast. My mom used to live here. My brother used to live here. This is one of the craziest towns. I mean, just a crazy place in Flagler County. So this police saw this guy driving down on State Route 100 and he was driving down and he wasn't speeding, but police thought, yeah, we should probably pull him over. So they pull him over and the guy rolls down his window and he's like, They're like, do you know what you did? He was like, nope. Well, sir, we've received several calls because you have been driving backwards for like 20 miles.
He must have noticed that.
He was in reverse the whole time. And his response, I wasn't swerving. So he was driving well backwards. The driver, William Murphy the Third, said that it was having mechanical issues and the car was stuck in reverse. And he thought, I'm just going to drive it backwards to AutoZone. That's his quote. Well,
there you go.
So the police officer is like, okay, well, let's see it. Put it in drive and see what happens. Oh my God. Miraculously, it was fit.
Was there alcohol involved in this particular story?
I'm not going to surprise you and say he was quite drunk and also on drugs. And by the way, it was charged now with habitual driving with a suspended license. He has been pulled over so many times for suspended license, yet he thought it was a great idea to draw some attention to himself and drive backwards for 20 miles. What is wrong with people? Like 10 prior convictions.
There's a TikToker that took a pickup. Was a pickup truck? Yeah, it was a pickup truck. And he works on cars. He's a car dude. And what he did is he reversed it. So he turned the inside around in the pickup truck. So he's actually driving forward, but it looks like he's driving backward.
Oh, my God.
And he gets pulled over. And he videos this because he gets pulled over anytime he goes anywhere.
Because he's dumb.
He just does these videos and they get millions of views because these cops going up and going, well, we can't ticket him because he's driving the right direction. So they are kind of funny videos, actually. I'm sorry.
That's weird.
Not like this guy, though. Not like this guy at all.
This is gonna blow your mind. Do you remember Baby Jessica? If I said the name
Stuck
Baby
in the Well.
Jessica. Yes!
How many years ago was that? Oh, my God.
Well, I'm going to tell you here in a minute because, oh, let's see. She is 40. She's 40. Today's a day of making you feel old. 40 years old.
So it was pre-internet when Baby Jessica was stuck in the well.
So for those who don't know, Baby Jessica was a girl at 18 months old. She became the focus of like this super dramatic 60-hour rescue effort that captivated them. This is like, this story was why 24-hour news stations were invented. Because of this story, they had news crews out. This little girl, 18 months old, fell in a well. Like in Texas, I think it was Texas, fell in a well and she was trapped 22 feet underground. She was there for 60 hours. There was a billion people and news crews and it was like on 24 hours, like I said, this like invented 24-hour news coverage. And they had to drill down next to her, go across and then they got her. She ended up surviving and she had a ton of surgeries and she had what, like they saved her. I mean, it was this, I remember the moment, I guess I was 8 years old, where they lifted her up out of the well. Like they had her and they pulled her out of the well.
It was on the nightly news, right? Every nightly news station covered that.
Every channel had it. Now, would you like to know why I'm doing a story on Jessica McClure Morales?
Got in trouble.
Jessica has just been arrested and charged with assaults and family violence. And Midland County Sheriff's Office responded to the residents in the area of South County Road just before 10 p.m. on April 11th. Arrest records indicate Jessica Morales was taken into custody at the scene. I don't know what happened, but baby Jessica went to jail.
Oh, man, I'm so disappointed. That's heartbreaking.
I know she was so famous and she said, but she actually says she underwent multiple surgeries following the incident due to injuries sustained while trapped in the well, though she has said in several past interviews, she doesn't remember any of it.
No, I imagine she's 18
months. Well, here's the deal, Jessica. We remember it. Get it together. You're a national treasure.
Who's now residing in a Florida jail, is it?
Texas, I think.
Oh, Texas,
Florida,
okay.
Texas, right. Same thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So last week, I don't think I did this story, but there was a zebra in Northern California that got loose and was like on the run. And they finally captured, this is in the Lincoln, Northern California, was found on a road north of Lincoln later in the day and was captured and returned home. Zebra got out again. That's right. That's right. The zebra escaped from his owner's property in Northern California for a second time in a few days. Now, why is this an interesting story? Would you like to guess the zebra's name?
Zeus.
Yup.
Oh, no. It really is?
The zebra's name is Zeus, and he keeps escaping from his house. And I just thought that was entertaining because if any of you have listened to my past stories about my Mustang named Zeus, who was also an escape artist, I had to do it.
Were bringing it all around today from baby Jessica to Zeus. That's funny.
We're going all over the place. One more. Now we have to start in Florida, and now we have to end in Florida. And we're going to go to Daytona Beach, Florida, because there was a driver. I think you're going to notice a pattern. Probably not the soberest dude in the world. So Daytona Beach, he's in this blue Mustang, this like super high, souped up Ford Mustang. Well, he decides that the Mustang is not good enough and he wants to take a plane. So what does he do? He takes his Mustang. He goes to the Daytona Beach airport and hits the gas and drives into Embry-Riddle as fast as he can, goes through the fence, busts open the fence, wrecks his car, and then Brian Parker, 58 years old, jumps out of his car and he's like, I am out of here. So what does he do? He runs to the nearest airplane. The quote is, a driver, an adult male who is highly intoxicated, approached an occupied running airplane and tried to make entry into it. I don't think these are airliners. These are like smaller
little planes.
So he was unable to enter the locked plane. I mean, was there a pilot in there? He's running. So like, was it just like running on warming up or was somebody in it? They didn't give me any answers to that. But because he couldn't get in that one, he's like, I'm not giving up. And so he runs to another plane and can't get in that one either. So he goes to another. It's like checking the doors, like to see if these are unlocked airplanes, so if he can get in the airplane. So he approaches, this is his third one, and finally airport staff has got him and they got him down. They sit him down and they're like, hey, have a seat. And so they start talking to themselves and he runs off again and he actually gets in one. Now, they were in hot pursuit. We're able to get him out of it before anything happened. And he has now been taken to jail. They said this whole incident took like under 5 minutes. It just happened so fast. He runs through the gate, jumps out, tries to get in a plane, gets arrested. They let him go, set him down for a second. He goes, gets in another plane. Like, the dude, you know what? Drugs are bad. Drugs.
Do they have keys? Do airplanes have keys to start them up? Or
I think they do. I don't know. I asked Chad about that with the F-16.
Okay.
And he said that there's no key for the F-16. This is like a huge thing.
I'm sure this is top secret too. We probably shouldn't be saying
I'm sure it's probably top secret, but I don't care. I mean, he's retired. So he said there's not a key. There's just a collection, button? Like a buttons, but like
a lot
a
of
billion
buttons.
Oh. In order. And you can only start it in order. So it's not like some random person.
Yeah, like this drunk guy's not going to figure that out.
No, I don't think he's going to start an F-16, but these are little Embry-Riddle planes. Yeah, bless his heart. He was finally. The picture is of him hog-tied on the ground, surrounded by security wearing latex gloves. There you go.
And
thank
if
you,
people,
everybody who did not send in any ding stories except for you, Delia. You're my personal hero.
And where can they send it if they get ambitious for next week?
I mean, seriously, y'all need to make up for some lost time here. Weird news at horseradionetwork.com.
Very good. Well, thank you all for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We'll be back here on Friday with a new episode for you. Normally, we would have, I think tomorrow, normally, yes, normally we would have an Equine Affair episode. It's going to be dark tomorrow because we did three of those over the weekend. So
yeah, we're tired.
We're good on Equine Affair.
We're done.
So it'll be Jamie and I back here on Friday. Hang on, auditors. Ashley's going to be here to review the survey results, which were quite interesting this year, and we appreciate all your participation in that as well.
Bang your gal, everybody.